we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
What frightens you more, living within 50 miles of a nuclear power plant or watching your color TV? I'm Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse, always a beat ahead. Thanks for listening. A while back, I had a show where I discussed radiation experiments conducted by the federal government without the consent of research subjects. The experiments were testing for beneficial versus toxic doses of radiation. Of course, this would provide useful information, but it was the lack of consent that was so shocking. Nobody escapes radiation. It's everywhere. It's in your food. It's in your television. It's on a coast-to-coast airplane trip. Some people say no amount of radiation is safe. Others believe the potential benefits of radiation are, as one author said, phenomenal. Data show that at certain doses of radiation, all-cause mortality, including cancer, is reduced. Follow-up on survivors of the atomic bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki showed surprising results. The survivors of low-dose radiation live longer than the residents who weren't exposed at all. There's similar findings around the globe where researchers compared cancer rates of residents in areas of high versus low background radiation. A large study done by the Department of Energy and Johns Hopkins examined the medical histories of thousands of nuclear workers and similarly situated non-nuclear workers. They found that all-cause mortality was higher for what? The non-nuclear workers. There's a whole discipline that studies this dose-response relationship of environmental agents, where the agent may produce harmful effects at high doses, but beneficial effects at low doses. It's called hormesis, and that'll be one of the things we talk about tonight. There's lots of dose responses that we deal with every day. Oxygen, carbon monoxide, mercury, lead, arsenic. Like the pharmacologists say, the poison is in the dose. But these studies showing the dose response curve has been largely ignored. Could it be that stoking fears about exposure to low-level radiation is merely another excuse for more government control? It's fairly easy to engender those fears since the average Joe or Jane doesn't know much about the types of radiation, I guess, beyond the sun's ultraviolet radiation that can give us a mean sunburn, leathery skin, or promote melanomas. But as with so many public health issues, political concerns sometimes take precedence over facts. Politicians can vilify nuclear reactors to get votes from the environmentalists. And radiation exposure can always be a source of fear to keep us in line. But like they say in the X-Files, the truth is out there. My guest today is going to help us sort through radiation facts and fiction. Dr. Robert Sheock practiced radiology for over 25 years. He graduated cum laude from Notre Dame and earned his MD degree at Harvard Medical School. He was a surgical intern at Stanford and a diagnostic radiology resident at Massachusetts General Hospital. On the political side, he's the past president of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. He's a board member of Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. Dr. Sheock is deeply involved with public policy issues. He advocates for protecting innocent human life, for patient and physician freedom, and for minimizing social engineering in healthcare. His articles have been published in multiple newspapers and medical journals, including the British Journal of Medicine and the Western Journal of Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cheong.
Thank you so much, Dr. Singleton.
Well, let's get started. For one, even though I've been around radiation, being in the operating room when they use something called the C-arm when they're fixing broken bones, so there's radiation going on, and I've been around it, I've put on my lead jacket and little thyroid protector around my neck. You're a radiologist. You've been around it all your adult life. But my first question to you is, do you glow in the dark after all these years?
Well, nobody is accusing me of that, but I wouldn't mind it if I did. Thank you. Well, you did mention I've been around x-rays and radiation all my life, but some of this information I wasn't exposed to when I was in training. Yet some of the experiments and some of the data go back over a century now. When Rentgen first discovered x-rays back in the late 1800s, it was totally unknown, and yet there had been a lot of experience going on. And of course, my training was to teach me how to really analyze images and help other doctors and patients figure out what was going on medically. So it's not surprising, because this is, it's sort of like one of my best friends is a journalist and a writer, and explaining some of this stuff to him, he explained, well, you know, I'm just a reporter and I write articles and things and then I send them to my editor. And if I come across something really interesting, and maybe it might be this radiation hormesis business, I might be inspired to write an article about it. But then it goes to my editor. My editor says, never heard of this one before. This really sounds crazy. And so most of the time, maybe 9 times out of 10, it'll hit the spike on his desk. And at big papers, then it goes up to through a couple of layers. And each time, there might be 1 out of 10 chance of it getting through. So the chance that some of this good news getting through at a big paper, maybe 1 out of 1,000. So it's not surprising that this information has not been popular, because it so goes against what we've been hearing about from, I would call them, panic mongers throughout the last decades. Is not so surprising. And also, I'll put in a plug here for our common friend, Dr. Jane Horient. She's president of the Doctors for Disaster Preparedness organization that focuses on big picture disasters like the panic about ionizing radiation, where I first got in touch with and learned about much of what we're going to talk about today, and many of the people that have been very important. There have been speakers at Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. I'll shorten it to DDP, since I have trouble with long words. And so I want to thank her. She is also another past president of AAPS, Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, which Dr. Singleton and I have been affiliated with for some time now.
Well, let's start at the top. That's a great introduction. And just tell us, what are the different kinds of radiation?
Well, I'll put it in the really big picture. And this radiation we're talking about is generally a form of electromagnetic radiation. Now, that spectrum goes, over frequencies and energies of a range of like 10 to the 25th, which is, I don't even know how many, quintillions that would be, but it's probably a quintillion. It goes from very long wave and very low energy radio waves up through, up through what we use for radio. And then, there's a big gap in there, and then we get up into light waves. And light waves are also a form of the same electromagnetic radiation. We feel it from the sun. But the ones we're going to be talking about are the rays that can break apart chemical bonds in molecules or even atoms. And this actually starts in the ultraviolet, the violet far off the violet end of the spectrum that we really can't see, but enough gets through from the sun that it gives us suntans and sunburns if we're not watching. And at the really powerful end of that, about 1.2 electron volts is the energy in one of these little pulses of radiation, is enough to break apart some pretty weak bond, chemical bonds. But then you've got to get more over into soft X-rays that are more energetic. And then there's a, then we get into microwave radiation. Again, microwave is a form of radiation, but I'm sorry, I skipped, I didn't mention it earlier, because that still is up there in the radio end. And that's very, very low energy in each individual pulse. But from the ultraviolet getting into soft and then other more powerful X-rays, like, you know, the energy I mentioned, 1.2 electron volts. So an electron volt is a measure of energy, not a voltage. And when we get up into the clinical X-rays we use, like I did when I was in practicing in radiology, we're talking about 6,000 kilovolts. And each one of those pulses is strong enough to ionize chemicals and break up bonds in, you know, everything from, you know, water. That's most of the human body and other things. And then the really high energy ones that we still call, they're ionizing, but they're not electromagnetic radiation. And those would be like beta rays. Those are actually individual electrons that typically get spit out of an atom when it undergoes radioactive decay, and then alpha rays. Now, we don't worry too much about beta and alpha rays unless we've got some inside our body, because these alpha rays are actually, you know, you think of the helium molecule, or helium atom, I'm sorry. Helium does not form molecules, it just is an atom. And that's number two in this periodic table. And it's got two protons, which give it the number two, and two neutrons inside. Well, some of these disintegrations of radioactive stuff spit out just those two, just the nucleus, just the two proton and two neutron combinations. And that's called an alpha ray. Now, that doesn't even penetrate a sheet of paper, much less your skin. So as I say, unless you get it inside your body, like you breathe it in, breathe some of this stuff in, or you eat some of it and take it inside, like polonium-210, it's notorious for being used as a lethal agent by the Soviets and their subsequent agents. It's, you know, people have died of overdoses of that. But like most everything else in biology, the dose makes the poison. I had a little brush that had some of the same polonium-210 inside. There was a little tiny screen in front of it. But these alpha rays, they will cause static electricity to dissipate because they're pretty good at conducting and doing that. So again, the dose makes the poison. Beta rays can penetrate deeper, but again, they rarely get deep inside the body because they interact with tissue so much more actively than these gamma rays or X-rays do, that they're not so much a concern, again, from external sources outside the body. But if you have some of this material inside the body, then people start to worry about it. And again, getting back to what I repeated and what you said at the beginning, the dose makes the poison in any of these things, including this kind of radiation. And as you alluded, I mean, many things can be poisonous. Arsenic and selenium can be poisonous, but at the same time, these are essential atoms to our physiology, our human bodies, but if you get too much, they're toxic for you. And ironically, well, we know too much water, whether in drowning or if you drink too much of it even, can kill you. Not to mention oxygen, of all things. If you're in high pressure oxygen, 100% oxygen, it reacts so strongly with your bodily tissues that it can be poisonous. Maybe the only exception to that is Mae West alluded to once. She once commented, too much of a good thing is wonderful. But I have concluded from trying to sort this out, the only thing she could have been talking about was true love. Because even the best things in life, like to my mind, chocolate cake and other chocolates and beer, are wonderful. But we all know that too much of those can be harmful.
Well, thank you. That is an amazing description. I just think so many people don't know. And these days with social media and all this stuff, there's a lot of people blathering on that have no idea what they're talking about. So that's a good summary. And then we'll get into hormesis and a few sources of radiation in our everyday life that ought to let us know not to be afraid of things. Now, one thing that we're talking about today is dose response. And I just have to say, I've been taking Cofix RX, which is a nasal spray that wards off bacteria and viruses. And nothing's going to destroy 100% of bacteria and viruses. But this is kind of a dose response thing, that if it can take away 95% of this, most of us, it can help keep most of us from getting sick. And that, of course, came up with COVID and, you know, talk about stoking fears and having everybody afraid of getting sick. Well, this is one thing we can do is put the nasal spray in once or twice a day, morning, evening, to help cut your risk of getting COVID. And it's got povidone iodine, which really months ago, Dr. McCulloch wrote an article talking about iodine's ability to kill, for the most part, COVID viruses. So this is something I've been using. Knock on wood, I've stayed healthy, and I think everybody ought to look into it. So that's my little spiel about dose response. And just remember, nothing kills everything. And we're going to talk some more about that. There's actual key points at which something can hurt you or something can benefit you. So thanks for listening to our show. And just to remind you that we've got the free apps on Apple, Android, and Alexa. And we're on every weekday at 5 with an encore at 10 and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit myfreedoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America out loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
So let's get back to our discussion of radiation. So, doctor, what are some common sources of radiation just in our everyday lives, you know, to let us know it's nothing to be afraid of in these everyday doses?
Well, the common sources include, for example, the potassium-40 in your very own body. Now, that's one of these isotopes, which is a fancy word to describe atoms that have different numbers of neutrons in their nuclei. And yet we're all endowed with that because it's very, very hard to separate from the potassium that doesn't disintegrate and release radiation in your body. That amounts to, you know, we're talking now, I'm talking about, I'll use millirads or millirem. It's pretty much the same unit. And a rad is a measure of absorbed doses in human beings generally. So the potassium 40 and other stuff inside your own body, you know, that contributes about 40 to the total that the average human in America receives every year, about 300 millirem. So that's, you know, a little over 10%. And fallout is less than 1/1000th of a millirem. Likewise, nuclear power plants is also less than 1/1000th, but yet, you know, your TV, smoke detectors, and other stuff you've likely got in your own house, that accounts for about 10 of these millirems. We never, you know, pay much attention to that, which is perfectly reasonable. And radon in the house accounts for over half of that in the average house. Now, one thing to remember is exactly zero of your everyday background radiation comes from sunlight, and because that, you know, unless you're out in the sun and you're getting some, you know, the ultraviolet, well, that's only skin deep. But the radiation is very similar to sunlight, and that is, once you're not in sunlight, you're not getting any ultraviolet light. It's not contributing to the sunburn. The sunburn is actually your bodily response. So that shows up like 6 to 8 hours later. Also, you hear about radiated food. Same thing there. The radiation that food gets exposed to goes all the way through and it destroys bacteria that might be in the food, but there is no radiation you can possibly get from that kind of radiation because it goes right through and is gone. Another little source, about another 10%, is cosmic rays and dirt. There's thorium and uranium in soil, you know, very, very widely spread. And those are very slowly decaying isotopes. Like I mentioned, the potassium-40 Well, that has a half-life of 1.5 billion years before half of that disappears from what we have on Earth. And the cosmic rays are another about 30 of these millirem. Some places on Earth, the residents there get exposed to as much as, I'll use the same unit, 48,000 of these millirem. And yet, you know, scientists have not been able to discover any higher incidence of, say, biological defects in newborns. Some of them, they say they're more successful at having babies than other places. And so, you know, it's the people that are used to that, you know, there's some acclimatization that occurs even to radiation, which we will probably get into later on. So those are the most common sources, and then man-made, like mostly, you know, what you get when you get a regular X-ray, or you might have a radioisotope examination, that averages about 60 of these millirem. So again, that's well below the dose that we really have any evidence is going to cause any permanent harm. Now, even in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the scientists that went in and they started doing medical tests and things, and they estimated the radiation doses. Now I'm going to switch to the 1,000 times more heavy unit, the rad or the rem. Now remember, this is 1,000 times as much as these milli. Milli means 1/1,000th units. And they got up to like 50 of these rem or 50,000 units before they could even find any changes on blood tests. You know, the white blood cells were showing some difference. And before you start getting any symptoms at all, you're up to 100 of these RADs or REM. Then you might have, you know, loose bowel movements because your intestinal lining is very sensitive to radiation, because the whole lining of your small intestine replaces itself literally every 3 days. The cells come up from the little crypts in the bottom of the intestinal mucosa or lining, and they kind of migrate out to the tip. And then when they get out to the tip, they get sloughed off and get digested and recycled. So anyway, that's probably more than our average listener wants to know.
Well, that's actually a very interesting factoid, and I'm sure that is, excuse the expression, food for thought.
Yes.
Well, I remember when I was an intern and I was starting to get exposed to radiation, and I was at San Francisco General, which was a big brick building, and it had little courtyards that were in the middle of these buildings. And so I was all worried, and the radiologist said, if you go sit down and have your lunch in the courtyard in this brick building, you're getting more radiation than you're going to get from hanging out over here in the radiology department. And I always remembered that and avoid brick.
Yeah, that brings to mind, you know, a lot of the rocks, and I lose track of which ones, I think granite, they just have got some radiation built in. But, you know, I have seen comments of the effect that if you like go into the United States Capitol building, well, you hang around in there and you're getting, instead of like external sources only now, I've got a radiation meter that I've checked out, sort of, you know, just in everyday life. And I get maybe 15 of these. Well, now I'm going down to micro. Anyway, it's less than, you know, way less than even one of these millirem per hour. I get like 1/100th of a millirem per hour. But you go into the Capitol building, and I would get, United States Capitol building, I would be getting 4 times as much.
Well, and is that from all the hot air from the politicians?
No, that is definitely more toxic. I agree.
Well, we need to get into this topic of hormesis. It's such a funny word. And you know, I think when we were chatting, you mentioned it's too bad somebody couldn't have come up with a better word. And it almost reminds me of homeopathic, where there's doses, this idea that the poison is in the dose. And so this hormesis, and it's H-O-R-M-E-S-I-S, that's okay, in a nutshell, and you'll explain it more, that at low doses, there might be some stimulation of DNA repair and make you healthier at high doses, and depends on what the agent is. It could overdose you on whatever the beneficial effect was. So march us through this hormesis, and how long has it been around, and how'd people get onto this idea?
Well, some people have suggested adaptive response, but that's kind of on the mild side. But I did read one person who really got interested in this whole business of adaptive response or hormesis. He actually got the book, Radiation Hormesis, but he didn't bother to read it because, well, this really sounds weird. Until he found out, you know, that it really was very significant. Now, one man that's really done a lot of research on this recently is Ed Calabrese. He's a toxicologist at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. And his own personal story is interesting because when he was in college, one reason he got interested was, well, one experiment, he just wasn't much interested in it. And it was in toxicology and poisons. And one of the experiments was they, you know, took this poison and they diluted it down and they put it in, you know, in the water that was feeding these plants that were growing. And they had controls, which just means that they just had normal, you know, watering. It's the same as these experimental plants did, but they had a bit of this poison. So, you know, the plants didn't do well when they got this poison. But Calabrese's experiments, when he was an undergraduate, his plants did better. And it turned out he'd messed up, because to get the right dose of this particular poison, they took it out of the bottle. And then, as we did in chemistry experiments pretty often, we took, say, 1 ounce or one milliliter. I'll just use 1 ounce of that. And we would suck up 1 ounce of that into, you know, like a syringe. And then we would suck up 9 ounces of water to dilute it down until we got to the point where it was dilute enough for our experiment. Well, at Calabrese, he discovered, and they finally figured out what he did, he went one step too many. So this poison that he gave to his plants was actually 1/10 as much as he should have given. And ironically, it actually stimulated the plants to grow. And he has extended this concept in toxicology to many, many, many things. And I mentioned arsenic and selenium. Those are poisons if you get too much, but at the same time, they're literally essential for our bodies to work properly. So this showed up accidentally in many ways. And just like these editors in the newspaper, scientists doing experiments or doing studies would come up with unsuspected responses sometimes, like low doses of radiation. You know, it looked like this was healthy. Well, that was just unacceptable, because everybody knew that every single zap of radiation did you harm. This kind of goes back to, you know, Darwin's day. At that time, he called the stuff inside our cells protoplasm, because under the microscope, looked all the same. And now we know that every single human cell has got, you know, innumerable tiny little molecular machines ticking around, making energy, using energy to do one thing and another. And so, you know, this response to radiation was the same thing. And early on, it was pretty early on discovered that high doses of radiation did harm people. And some people died of overdoses of radiation. They just got overly enthusiastic in one case. And even more recently, it's been accidental where some highly intense sources of radiation like cobalt-60 from radiation therapy machines, it was not properly recycled or literally taken out of the machine when the whole machine was recycled. And one example I've heard about was cobalt-60 from one of these radiotherapy machines. It got recycled and, and then it was, actually the example I'm going to use is a different one, it's cesium. But anyway, it's a similar kind of thing. It got recycled by accident, but these little bits of dust, they kind of sparkled. And so children used it as toys. And, there were about four or five people that literally died of the overexposure to that. But once again, we had what we almost would call a natural experiment. Some of this same cobalt-60 was recycled, and it was just, lumped in with the rest of the steel and the cobalt. And the cobalt-60 was mixed in and then mixed very thoroughly. And it ended up being incorporated in steel rebar. These steel rebars are used, they're bars, about a half an inch in diameter. And they look pretty ugly. They kind of corrugated, but anyway, they're used to reinforce concrete. Well, these same rebars were used in building four different apartment buildings over in Taiwan. And by accident, it was later on discovered about 10 years after these apartments were built that there was this radiation, which was several times over normal levels of radiation. And so they panicked and they had these apartment buildings evacuated and so forth. And they still were evacuated, last I heard anything about it. But yet the people living in these apartment buildings were doing better than the average person in Taiwan. And you also alluded to Hiroshima and Nagasaki and how people who were exposed to lower doses of radiation, like, up to this 50 rads or 50,000 millirem dose that we were talking about before. Sorry to confuse you, but try to keep it straight in your own head. Anyway, they were living longer. And grandmother, go ahead.
No, just say after we have our break, I want to discuss how this works. What does it do to the white blood cells, or what do people propose as the mechanism for low dose radiation actually improving people? So I just right now want to thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. We are always a beat ahead. You can hear the shows. If you don't listen to it live, you can hear the shows on podcasts. They go direct to podcast in 24 hours, and they're on lots of these podcast networks: Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart. So make it easy. Just bookmark americaoutloud.com/pulse. Our lineup, if I do say so myself, is great. You have me on Monday, Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and Tuesdays with concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesdays with Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud. Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And Fridays with our newest addition, Nurse Jody O'Malley. And we have a new feature. I guess it's not quite so new now. If you have questions, you can send them in to americaoutloud.com/pulse. You'll get an answer and you can ask a question of the host or the guest, and we'll try to get you an answer as soon as we can.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
So, back to Dr. Chiak and hormesis, that funny sounding word. How does it work? What does it do? And do people know this? Is it a guess? Tell me what you know.
Okay. Well, as we were talking about earlier on, a better name for hormesis would be adaptive response. And this is turns out to be a pretty common phenomenon, but how it works, well, it's kind of been sorted out more and more so in recent years. And now I am not totally up to date on this at all, but we do know that it is a fact of life. And it's been very easily ignored because it wasn't what was expected, because as I mentioned, it's been known early on that high doses of radiation, it can harm you, it can kill you, it can help to induce cancer later on. And, you know, one of the theories that was popular was that, well, okay, they finally figured out that, well, this ionizing radiation, it does break down these bonds, chemical bonds within cells. And that can harm DNA, and that's, you know, the center of the cell, and that's what allows cells to divide and allows the human race to continue, you know, et cetera. And the way it does that is largely by creating active chemicals. Like if one of these rays happens to hit a water molecule and exactly the right or the wrong way, depending on how you look at it, it can break up the water molecule and you have a very active hydrogen ion H plus, and then you have the hydroxyl OH negative. And that negative little moiety is oxidative, and that causes oxidation of all sorts of other molecules, which can include DNA molecules and et cetera. And that definitely can be a cause of cancer, but much more recent discoveries in biochemistry have demonstrated, according to people that I trust, and this goes back 20, 30, 40 years, that 99.9% of these oxidative ions are just caused by normal human metabolism. And maybe 1 out of 1,000 is due to radiation. So this makes it theoretically impossible to prove whether a particular exposure to radiation caused a particular cancer or not. And as we were talking about earlier, a lot of these discoveries of the hormesis or adaptive response were kind of incidental. And then sometimes when these responses were discovered, even by scientists, they kind of buried the data. Like there was a paper by radiologist Miller, and it was published. And it was about the incidence of breast cancer in women who had fluoroscopy. And so some of the women, I need to back up. Fluoroscopy is using an X-ray beam to go through a person, and then it's picked up by a detector on the other side. These days, it's all electronic and it's amplified, et cetera. In the old days, it was typically a lot higher doses because just a screen that would pretty much stop all the X-rays. But these X-rays, when they hit that screen, they glowed in the dark. As far as I know, as I mentioned, I haven't been. But You know, there was a high dose of radiation to these women. And so the dose depended a lot on which way they were facing this beam. And this was used like for treatment of tuberculosis, perhaps, and other things, as best I remember. But if the woman was facing the X-ray tube, she got a much higher dose than she did if she were facing away. So they did all these calculations, and sure enough, the women that were facing the X-ray beam did have a higher incidence of breast cancer, but the women that were facing away, that were way down in the low dose end, they actually got less breast cancer. Now that was showed up in the graph that they put, you know, in their results, but they just pretty much ignored the comment until later on it was noticed. And I remember this was noticed even when I was in training more decades ago than either of us would care to mention. But, you know, they didn't know what it was. And then later on, this was finally figured out, well, this was very likely the adaptive response. So the theory behind it is low doses of a lot of things like radiation and, you know, this is the basis for vaccines. Low doses of a lot of these toxic agents send an alert to the body, and the body responds by what we call the immune response. And the body, in a much very complicated way, as a medical student, I didn't understand it at all. They called one of the active elements complement. Well, they made up that to mean they didn't know what it was. Like I confounded one jury I was giving witness testimony to once. Well, in radiology, now I even forgot the word we used to cover it up. Oh, and then I apologize. I said that word just means we don't know. That got a smile out of the jury. So fortunately, I forgot it and can't confuse us further right now. So this happens with many things, and you know, vaccination of the you know, in the old days, that meant that, you know, well, the body gets a response. Sometimes it was a dead agent or a dead virus. Sometimes it was a live agent that was used, like for tuberculosis. Now, I forgot the name of that one. It was similar to tuberculosis, but it didn't cause tuberculosis. It caused the body to respond, and so that gave something of a protection against that. So it's been known throughout time, and like some of the popular spas and healing baths, and you know, they were full of minerals, and people would go to them, and then somebody noticed that the people went to these spas and didn't bother to go to the baths, they got better too in a lot of cases. But those were typically high in radon. And radon, according to Dr. Bernard Cohen and others, that actually the people that live in the most highly radioactive houses from radon have a lower incidence of lung cancer, you know. So if you're living in a highly radioactive radon house, you're maybe 1 out of 5 chances less likely to come down with lung cancer. But if you live in a totally radon deficient chance, then you're at high risk.
This brings us to the intersection. You hear this data, you hear what you're saying about this. It's written up. It's not like you're making it up. Where's the politics behind kind of hiding the data, just like they did with COVID? You know, it's very interesting. Everybody thinks COVID was the beginning of the end of science and follow the science and I am the science and all this. This has been going on for years. And this is an example of really a scientific cover-up where the data is out there and it just gets ignored. So what do you think is behind this?
Well, I think this goes back decades and probably centuries. One recent politician said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And, you know, some people are rightly concerned of radiation because, as we've already discussed, high doses can be harmful. But a very prominent scientist, way back in 1946, he won the Nobel Prize for his studies in radiation. And he was part of a lab that was using high doses of radiation to induce mutations in animals and hope that we would get a helpful mutation. Well, more modern researchers are finding that when you get a mutation, you have one of three effects. The organism dies, or the organism is, disabled to some degree or another. And I forgot the third thing that happens, but the same Dr. Hermann Muller won the Nobel Prize for that work in 1946. He was very concerned about high doses of radiation, and particularly in the context of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. At the same time, one of our modern heroes, Dr. Ed Calabresi, that I've heard speak several times, and is the scientist that did that plant experiment that failed in the wrong way, he researched intensively the documentation and the letters between Dr. Miller and Dr. Muller and Dr. Stern. Now, Dr. Stern was very concerned about radiation, but he found some unusual effects, which we would now call hormesis or adaptive response, and called into question this whole idea that, well, a single zap can harm, cause irreplaceable harm. And Dr. Muller knew about this, but in the Nobel Prize speech, he said this now known falsehood: every single zap will harm you. And if it hits the DNA or something, it can, be on your report card for the rest of your life and cause cancer even decades and decades and decades after. And as you've already described, that every cell, to a limited degree, every cell in your body has adaptive responses. And one of the adaptive responses, ironically, is that the cell decides, oh, I'm too sick to go on. I am going to dissolve myself, let myself be recycled. And of course, the individual cell is part of the whole organism. And it doesn't go through this thought process, but it's part of the organism. So I use the word recycle, rather than some people, call it cell death. Well, it's not like death that we think about it. The whole organism dies, the whole bacteria dies or whatever, and then it sometimes gets stinky or looks bad. But, very few of us have ever looked into it enough, and I did even back in medical school, to figure out that the human body, every second of our lives on the average, makes 2 million new red blood cells. And I estimate every second it makes only 1 million platelets, which are another blood cell. Where do they go? They get recycled. And the spleen seems to be one of the big recycling organs in the body, where these cells go to recycling. I'm not going to call it a graveyard, because then the body takes these cells apart. A lot of them, they take themselves down to a very small size, these other cells, and then they get dissolved by, other white blood cells. But some places, like apparently the spleen, are in that business full time. So, like every good, don't let a good crisis go to waste. Like some opportunists saw this whole COVID business to be a big panic. So what did they do? They used the panic to do a huge human experiment with, the whole world almost, except for a few, very few countries or very few places not exposed to it, like the remaining Aborigines in the Amazon, say. They had this theory based on computer models. And as one of the people that helped my good friend Jay Richards write the book, The Price of Panic, How the Tyranny of Experts Turned a Pandemic into a Catastrophe, figured out, or he understood for a long time. He's a PhD statistician. His name is William M. Briggs. And he's a co-author of this book that, all computer models only tell you what they're told to tell you. In his slide program, he says that. And then his next slide is a cover of Vogue magazine with 9 very attractive but very appropriately dressed female models on the cover of Vogue magazine. And that gets our guy's attention. And that is quite literally true. So these people that wrote the computer model, they took what they knew, which it turned out to be they did not talk with epidemiologists. They did not talk with cell biologists. They did not talk with a lot of other people. And so they came up with this idea that earlier on, one of these so-called experts in London, he came down with these totally out of the ballpark estimates of immense damage. And like the co-authors of this same book, these experts were wrong. They were wrong in the right direction.
Fear seems to sell. Fear seems to control. And this has been a tool, as we can see, for years. The radiation fears are way older than the COVID fears. And it's like we move from one set of fear-mongering to the next, and one set of fear-mongering to benefit a special interest group. And it's pretty disgusting because all we've heard, COVID brought out this follow the science. Well, science has been so disrupted and so twisted and perverted. And it's, I don't know whether it's good to know or bad to know that it's been going on before COVID. And
And like I wrote to, I emailed a friend in my church just a couple of days ago, and he was interested in this, and I gave him some of this little basic information about, what to do in response to an atomic bomb flash. If you see a bright flash, way brighter than the sun, the first thing you do is get away from windows, because if it is from an atomic bomb or even from that meteor that exploded over Siberia, it took almost 3 minutes for just the shockwave to come in and bust windows and hurt a lot of people.
Well, I have to tell you, Doctor, we don't even have 3 minutes left in our show, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
I know.
Well, my total response, I said, when faced with panic, don't do something, just stand there. Except in that case.
Well,
and that is so true, and dirty bombs, the same thing. Et cetera. So thank you, Marilyn.
Well, thank you. This has just been so great. And we could go on and on, and we'll have to do it another time since they only give me less than an hour. So I want to thank you for coming, and thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse. We are always a beat ahead.